Make It Right, the manufacturing podcast.
So you've got a great idea for a new product. You've done your market research, you've got a market, you've determined your price point, you know how you're going to build demand, you've got funding, and now all you have to do is get your product manufactured. And just when you think you've reached the summit, another emerges from the clouds. This week on the Make It Right podcast, we look at how to turn your product idea into reality and the challenges you may face and the solutions you may use. My guest is Adam Hahn. He's the co-founder and CEO of Leaf Shave, who's going to walk us through his journey as he brought his alternative to the disposable razor to market. Adam, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
So I think you're going to tell us a very interesting story. So before we even get started, so people kind of have a mental picture in their head, describe what Leaf Shave is.
Yeah, so Leaf Shave, the company, we are really rethinking the entire shaving industry and the process of shaving. And the way we're doing that is with our flagship product, which is the Leaf Razor. And the Leaf Razor really solves three big problems that we saw in the shaving industry. The first two are problems that the consumer has, and then the last one is really like an eco problem. So the first one is this exorbitant ongoing cost of shaving. If you shave with disposable razors or disposable cartridge razors from, you know, any of the big shaving companies, you know that the prices that you pay for these replacements are just exorbitant. And really what it amounts to is kind of like a lifetime tax that they're putting on you for the privilege of shaving. And that's the first problem that we solve. The only replaceable disposable thing in our razor is the blade itself, and they cost pennies. So we really take that ongoing cost of shaving down to almost nothing. The second problem is, if you look at these products that the big guys sell, they kind of assume a one-size-fits-all mentality. Obviously, that's not true. Everybody has different skin and hair type. And so we built in a certain level of customization into our razor. And so you can kind of change the shaving experience to perfectly match your hair type and your skin type to get that perfect shave. And then the third problem we solve, which is really, in my opinion, probably the most important problem, is we are helping to keep what the EPA estimates as 2 billion plastic razors out of landfills every year. And this is a big problem. And so our razor is all metal. There's no plastic in it. You buy it once and you can use it to shave for the rest of your life. And like I mentioned before, the only thing that you throw away or replace are the metal blades themselves. And so these are stainless steel, which means they can be recycled, which would be, you know, the ultimate thing to do with them. Or if they do end up in a landfill, they will decompose at a fraction of the time that plastic would. And so that's how we're striving to kind of rethink this whole industry and make it better for the consumer and for the environment.
Okay, so if we go right to the very start of this idea, where did the idea come from and what made you think that this was a really good idea to move forward with?
So like most ideas and products, it comes from my own personal frustration with shaving. I've always kind of struggled with getting a good shave, and I think it's just a combination of, you know, I have sensitive skin, but I have really thick hair, and so even back to when, you know, I first started shaving, it was really a struggle for me to get a really good, comfortable shave. And so that really led me to try pretty much every shaving solution on the market to try and find something that worked for me. And in the process of looking for, you know, and trying all these razors, I came across these razors that are called safety razors. And they have been around for a really, really long time, like, 100 years. They used to be the standard. And they're great. And they're still around today. You can buy them. A lot of people still use them. You can get really, really great shaves with them. And they have a lot of advantages over cartridge razors. But the one thing that can be difficult with them is you do need to develop a certain technique to get a good shave with them. They have a bit of a learning curve to them, it would take a little bit longer to shave with them because you have to be a little bit more careful you can be, they can be a little bit more prone to cutting yourself if you don't use them the right way, which is kind of why everybody migrated over to cartridge razors whenever they came out, because they were just easier to use. And there wasn't really a learning curve. They had, you know, multiple blades, pivoting heads, all those kind of things. And so, you know, as I'm trying all these different razors, I I'm a mechanical engineer by trade. I thought to myself, well, why doesn't somebody kind of combine all the advantages of the safety razor with all the convenience of these cartridge razors and basically make a razor that is just a lot easier to shave with. But again, the cost is way lower, and also it's better for the environment. And so that's kind of what the Leaf razor is. And at the time I was working for another startup, it was a medical device startup. And I talked to this about to my co-founder, who ultimately became my co-founder. I told him about this. I told him about the idea, and he just absolutely loved it. You know, we commiserated together because he had shaving issues as well. And he said, you know, I just think this is an absolute slam dunk. And so that's kind of where it came from.
Okay, so from that first idea that, you know, maybe this thing is possible, to when you were ready to go out and find a manufacturer, how long was that time frame?
Yeah, I would say it was probably about 2 years. But my co-founder and I weren't working on it exclusively. So as I mentioned before, we were both working at another startup. It was a medical device startup. And so we were kind of pursuing this part-time. We said, you know, yeah, this is a great idea, but, you know, we don't have the means to just both go out and quit our jobs and work on this exclusively. Let's kind of work on it in the background, part-time, and do as much as we can and kind of develop this idea and take it as far as we can without, you know, going full time on it. So we kind of hedged our bets in that scenario. And so the first thing to do is to make a prototype, design it and get it to a point where you're not terrified of putting it against your skin and actually shaving with it. And that takes time. Mechanical products usually take quite a bit of time to develop. Because the iterations take time to fabricate, right? So it's not like software where you can kind of make changes and test them on the fly. Not that software is easy by any means, but the iterations can go a little quicker, because with mechanical things, electrical things, when you make a change, you have to test that change. And the way to do that is to actually, you know, build it up. And that takes a lot of time. And so we went through, you know, dozens of prototypes and beta testers before we came to something that we said, okay, we're comfortable that this thing is good enough to go to market with. So I would say, you know, it was about 2 years working part-time. If I was to consolidate that into working, if we were working on it full-time, I would say it would take about, you know, probably 1.5 years to develop that prototype.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the manufacturing challenges you had, because you're down in the States and you had to actually offshore your manufacturing. So was this in your plan, and was it difficult to find a manufacturer? Or was that something that you came up against and went, oh, wow, now we have to go, you know, across the pond to Asia and find somebody to make this thing?
Yeah. So, you know, like I said, my background is in medical devices, and I've been around manufacturing pretty much my whole career, but they were all domestic manufacturers. So pretty much everything was in America, and that's what I was used to. I had a feeling that, because this is a CPG product and cost is of the utmost importance, that we were going to have to go overseas just based on cost. And I was confirmed in that when we got a couple quotes from U.S. manufacturers, and unfortunately, it just wasn't economically feasible to get it to the price point that we wanted to get it to. And so, you know, we said, okay, well, we're going to have to go overseas. I didn't have any experience with overseas manufacturers, so I was pretty nervous about that. In hindsight, how difficult was it? I would honestly say that it probably wasn't as difficult as I thought it would be. I thought that the language barrier was going to be a much bigger issue than it was. I thought that it was going to be very hard to find companies that would get back to you. And actually what I found, I was pleasantly surprised that's actually not the case. They've actually been great to work with. And finding them wasn't nearly as hard as I thought. We got a couple names from just word of mouth. We talked to some other people that had done overseas manufacturers. They gave us some names of some companies. We actually employed an intermediary that's overseas. And so he would go out and he would find manufacturers for us, and he kind of acts as our liaison. But then the other way that we did it, and this can be a little risky, but we went on Alibaba and we searched for companies that made the things that we wanted to make. That's probably the riskiest way to do it. But to be honest with you, one of our best manufacturers we found that way. They make a little metal tin that you dispose our blades in. That's what they do. And we found them on Alibaba. We liked the products that we made. We contacted them, we gave them the specs, and yeah, they turned out to be one of our best suppliers. So it actually, you know, it's certainly doable in this day and age of the internet and streamlined communication. It's really not that hard to find them.
And did that intermediary work with you when you were working with that Alibaba person?
No. So we went directly to them. So there's a few suppliers that we work directly with, but then our main supplier, we do work through this intermediary. And he's been great. He's been in the industry for a really long time. Like I said, the language barrier is non-existent with him, and he's a really good person to have on our side, and he just kind of coordinates the whole thing for us.
Okay. So let's talk. You had to get the actual razor part, or the tool, let's call it. You say you mentioned this tin box. What else did you actually get manufactured? Because I'm sure there's packaging, there's all this other stuff. So how many bits and pieces did you bring together to create your product?
Yeah. So if you talk about just the razor itself, we really needed them to supply the final product. So, you know, the parts assembled, finished, in a package. So because we didn't have the capability to really do any manufacturing in-house, really all we were going to do is we opened a small warehouse and we were going to distribute on our own. So really what we needed was them to supply the final product, that all we had to do was put it in a shipping box, put a label on it, and send it out the door. And you know, that's really complicated. And you know, to be honest with you, this thing from a manufacturing standpoint, It is not terribly complex. There's no electronics in it. There's no software, but it's still pretty hard to manufacture. In that, I think there's seven factories that actually touch this thing, and they all do various things before it gets to the final product. And so, you know, we had to be very careful about who we picked, because, you know, manufacturing, it's such a huge part of a business like this, and it can really make or break you. Luckily, I had that experience because I have dealt with manufacturing in the past, and I knew how critical it was to find the right supplier. And so, you know, we really had a pretty long process with vetting them. So what we did was we found a bunch of suppliers, a bunch of companies that could potentially make this for us. But we had to narrow it down to the ones that we thought would work. And so what we did was, you know, we did like a vetting process where we would, the first thing we would do is we would email them, and we would just start a communication with them, and we would see how that would go. Right. So are they getting back to us quickly? Is there any communication barrier? Are they excited about this product? Do they act like they want to? They want to help us. They want to be on the team. And so that's kind of the first level of vetting for them is just, can you establish a rapport with these companies? And so then the second one is, you say, okay, well, let's throw them some work and see how they do. So let's make 10 razor prototypes in different finishes and see how that process goes. And so, and what you're looking for is you're not just looking for the final product, how good it is, but you're also looking for how that process went, because the first time you make something, there's going to be issues. It's just inevitable. And so how does your supplier react to these issues? They could, you know, they could email you and say, hey, we have issues, and they could just throw their hands in the air and kind of wait for you to tell them what to do. They could make assumptions and not even tell you that there were issues, and you don't find out about them until you get the final product, which is probably the worst thing that you want them to do. Or on the flip side, they could say, hey, we have this issue, and here's a potential solution for this issue. You know, we've thought about it, and this is what we would do. And that's the ideal scenario, right? That's the supplier that you want to be in business with is somebody that understands the value of your product, wants to be on the team, and wants to come up with solutions to these things. And so that's what we were looking for, and we were lucky to find that.
And you actually had to rethink your manufacturing process. So what was the problem there?
Yeah, so a perfect example of this and why it's so important to have a great supplier is we have a couple parts in our razor that are very, very thin, and they have to be made out of stainless steel because, you know, stainless steel is really the only material that's strong enough at that thickness to not, you know, warp or bend. And so when I was designing this, I figured that we would just, we would either machine these parts or we would metal injection mold them. When it got to the supplier side, they looked at them and they said, you know, that's going to be just probably just too expensive. We can't make these in the volume that you want at the price point that you want. And so we were kind of dead in the water for a while until they came back and they suggested a completely different manufacturing process, which is a progressive die. So basically they start with a piece of stainless sheet metal and it goes through progressive iterations where they cut out shapes and bend it until it becomes a functional part. And so they suggested this, they kind of developed this whole thing. They gave us prototypes and it ended up working out, you know, perfectly. And almost like essentially redesigned the part for us to work with this manufacturing process. And it turned out to be, you know, one of our lowest cost items, even though it's probably one of our more complex parts. So, you know, that's an example of how having a supplier like this can really save you when you run into problems like this, because, you know, they're inevitable.
Right. So kind of a happy accident, I guess.
Yeah.
So do you think that there was anything you could have done differently in your early stages to realize that this might have been a problem in the manufacturing process?
Yeah, probably just know more about manufacturing. Like I said, I've been a design engineer for a long time. And so when it comes to manufacturing, I know enough to be dangerous. I know the high level of what can be done and what can't be done for a certain manufacturing process. But I don't necessarily know as much as the guy that's making it, right? Or the guy that's spent his whole life in manufacturing. I'll never have that level of knowledge, because that's just not, I don't work that closely with the manufacturing process. And so if I had known more about it, I probably would have been able to anticipate that problem and design it, you know, for that alternative manufacturing process right from the get-go. But you constantly learn about these things. And like I said, I think the most important thing you can do is expect problems like this and just be prepared to have to make design changes in order to kind of hone in on what works. And again, I can't say it enough. Having a manufacturing partner that's willing to work with you on those changes is absolutely critical.
So let's talk about when you received the first product. What was it like when you got that first shipment?
It was stressful because you're putting a lot of money out there, and you don't really have a ton of recourse if they don't give you what you want. And so that's kind of a contrast with American manufacturers is, well, A, with American manufacturers or somebody that's close to you, you're usually there a lot more, so you can visit them, you can kind of look over their shoulder a lot more than you can with somebody that's overseas. And B, if they don't give you what you want, you have some recourse, right? You have some kind of legal recourse for them to remake it. With overseas manufacturing, you don't really have that. If you get in bed with a manufacturer that's malicious, I mean, they could essentially, you know, steal your money. And there's not really much you could do about it. That's obviously a very worst case scenario. So for us, by that time, we had established enough of a relationship with the supplier that they were going to give us something. I mean, we weren't really worried about them just kind of running off with our money. But the question was, what are they going to give us, right? So they had made prototypes for us and those looked great, but there's a big difference between making 10 of something and making 5,000 of something, right? Because they're just different manufacturing processes, and you know, with that kind of volume, there's so many things that can go wrong or just get overlooked. And so, you know, the 3 months that we were waiting for these was a very stressful time because pretty much the entire business hinged on the success of this first manufacturing run. And so we went over there and we met them and we kind of looked over their shoulder as much as we could. And really we had people that have done this before. They basically told us what you should do is you should go over and basically live over there for the entire time it takes them to build these. And I probably would agree with that. Unfortunately, neither me or my co-founder were in a position to do that. So we went over there and we did as much as we could within a couple weeks. But in the end, we were still kind of crossing our fingers that what they got us was going to work. And so, you know, the worst case scenario is these things show up at the door and they don't work. And they don't work in a way that you can't fix them in-house. That was what kept me up at night. So yeah, it was a stressful time. But luckily, you know, we did as much as we could to make sure that they were functional. And in the end, you know, they weren't perfect, but they were good enough to the point where we could sell them, and anything that was wrong with them were things that we could fix on the fly in-house. And so what we did and what we still do to this day is we inspect 100% of these razors to make sure that they are perfect before they go out the door.
So are you constantly making changes with every new shipment of product, adjusting it to make sure you've got it right?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's never perfect, right? I mean, that's something that you always strive for, but you're just never going to get there. There's always going to be some rejection rate, especially when you really ramp up your production. And so you're constantly trying to tweak things, tweak the design, tweak the manufacturing process, just tweak the inspection process to kind of minimize that rejection rate. And so, yeah, we're constantly looking at things that we can do to improve, you know, either functionally or just from a quality standpoint. So that's one of the challenges that we face, especially, like I said, as you ramp up. Our first manufacturing run was 5,000, you know, but it's only going up from there, you know, 10,000, 20,000. And so every time you kind of add a zero to that number, you get a whole new set of challenges.
So what challenges are you facing now? Is there anything like beyond that manufacturing process? Is there a supply chain issue? Is there anything like that you're working on right now?
Yeah. So like I said, I mean, as you scale, you know, you constantly have to reevaluate who your suppliers are, your manufacturing chain, because, you know, our supplier is, they're not huge. Which has actually worked out perfectly for us in the beginning because we got a lot of personal attention and we could work with them one-on-one. But as we scale and as we get bigger, then they have issues on their end because they have to be able to supply us as many razors as we order in a timely fashion. And so those are a lot of the challenges that we have. Also, in respect to our quality system, you know, like I said, I mean, we are currently inspecting 100% of these razors. And we want to continue to do that just to make sure that our quality is absolutely top notch. But as you get to a certain volume, that becomes harder and harder. Couple that in with our new product development that we're doing. And so we're evaluating designing new razors and new products. So, you know, we're throwing stuff over the fence to our manufacturer to make prototypes and those kind of things. And then that puts a burden on them as well. So it's a constant battle, but as long as you're always improving and you're always measuring, you know, what you're trying to do and you can see a positive outcome, then that's the goal.
Yeah. I think, you know, we've all bought products that initially we really like them and then we go and we buy another one and there's something not quite right about it. And then all of a sudden you look at maybe where it's been manufactured, the new version of it, and you realize, oh, it's a completely different factory. It's in a completely different country and the quality has changed. So there is that challenge, isn't there? Once you move from that main manufacturer to somebody else just to scale, you might run into some quality issues and have to kind of start the process all over again.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that because you're right. I mean, we've all probably experienced that where you bought something and you said, wow, this is great. And then you bought it again and you're like, yeah, it's different. It's not as good. And, you know, those changes are probably things that sometimes you have to make, but the the key is to make them so that you don't sacrifice quality and you don't sacrifice function. And that's what we strive for. You know, we hold ourselves to a very high level, as do our customers hold us to a very high level of quality. And so we want to be able to deliver that for them. And as we make these changes going forward, we want to make sure that quality does not get sacrificed, because the last thing we want is for somebody who doesn't know anything about manufacturing to notice those changes. You know, that's, I think, when you've kind of failed.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever at any point in this whole process consider dropping the idea and just saying, this is not going to work, or we just don't have the bandwidth or the cash or anything to push this forward?
it's interesting. I asked myself that, and really the answer is no. You talk to other people that have startups, and you know, startups are up and down. I mean, you know, you can be on the highest of highs and then the lowest of lows. I mean, even within the same day, that's certainly the lifestyle. And, you know, most people would say that, yeah, I mean, I think about quitting all the time, but I think it's a little different for me for a couple reasons. One is that, you know, when I was first out of school, I worked for big companies, in engineering departments, you know, think Cube Farms. And that was fine. But then I got the opportunity to work for a startup company, the medical device company that I talked about earlier. And for me, just that way of working in a startup was just so much better for me. It was just so much more exciting. And, you know, the stakes were just so much higher, and you kind of had a vision into the entire company. And just that way of working to me was just so much better than working for a big company. And so anytime that I thought about quitting, I would think, well, if I quit, what am I going to do? You know, I'm going to have to go back to, you know, probably working for a big company. And that's not really what I wanted to do. So that was probably the first reason that I didn't really like the idea of quitting. But then the second reason is because I really truly believe in this product. I really do believe that it is a better way to shave, and it really solves real problems. And I believe in the whole, you know, sustainability of this and making this world a better place and reducing plastic and reducing waste. And so, when I take a step back, even if things aren't going well, I still say, okay, let's take a higher level overview of this. I still really believe that this is going to work and that this is better. And so anytime I get discouraged or things aren't going the way we want, I kind of fall back on that. And I say, okay, everything's a challenge, but it's going to be worth it.
So when you were talking earlier, Adam, you said that, you know, some of the problems with initial disposable razors and other razors is that you always have to keep buying things, right? And then you said that the way you've done your razor is that it's just the actual blade that you have to keep buying. Everything else is compact, and that blade actually is just worth pennies an item. So my question for you is, generally speaking, companies do these things to make you keep buying so they get that recurring revenue. Do you have that in your model somewhere?
Yeah, so that's actually, it's a really great question. It's something that everybody asks us is, you know, this razor blade model is a great business model for making money, and we're kind of turning it on its head. Mm-hmm. And so initially we make money on the razor itself, right? So the razor itself does have a higher price point. And some people, they scoff at that because they're used to spending, you know, $10 for a razor or almost getting the razor handle itself for free, because that's the business model that they're used to. And so when they see our price point is a little higher, you know, it takes some getting used to, even though if you do the math, it'll pay for itself within a year because you're not buying these replacement cartridges. But we do have margins built into the razor itself. And so we certainly, you know, we make money there. But then we also have plans in the future to develop consumables like shaving cream, aftershave, so that we do get recurring revenue, and the loyalty that our current customers have shown us can get manifested in more revenue by them returning to buy those types of things. And then we also sell the blades as well. These blades aren't proprietary. You can buy them pretty much anywhere, but we do sell them on our website. And like I said, I mean, we've we've garnered a lot of support from our customers, and they are returning to buy those blades. And so we do have a recurring component of revenue in there as well.
Okay. So what advice would you give to anybody who's setting out on their own product journey?
I would say initially manufacturing is key. Don't overlook manufacturing. I think it's a trap that a lot of people fall into. And I think it's because a lot of people just don't have manufacturing experience. You know, it's not that they're doing it on purpose. It's just that if you've never worked in a manufacturing environment, you really don't have an appreciation for how difficult it can be and how many problems can arise. I was lucky enough to have had some manufacturing experience and to have known that, you know, you really got to give it the attention that it deserves. You really got to do your diligence on picking a good supplier and a good manufacturer, because it can really kill you in the end if you don't deliver on that regard. But then also I would say, you know, build a product that you believe in. If you're not passionate about what you're building, then, you know, other people probably aren't going to be passionate about it either. Build a product that you can kind of take a step back and say, you know, this is a really good idea. Maybe another thing that we didn't talk about, one thing that we did was we actually did a Kickstarter campaign, a crowdfunding campaign, pretty early on. And I would certainly recommend that to anybody who's looking to build, especially, a consumer product, a CPG product, because it does a couple things. A, you know, it makes you some money, which you're certainly going to need when you're starting out. But B, it's a really great way to test your product without having to spend a ton of money, to see if other people are going to respond to it, if it's going to resonate with people, if they're going to feel the same way that you feel about it. It's a really kind of low risk way to kind of test that before you really go all in on a product. So I would highly recommend that as well. And then just, you know, prepare yourself for a lot of ups and downs, just like any startup, and just know that it's going to be a tough road, but it's, you know, it'll be fun. And in the end, if you make it, it'll all be worth it.
You know, it's funny, you were talking about your manufacturing challenges earlier, and it made me think of a company that I had worked with for a while, where they went to a manufacturer overseas, and they had some great prototypes created, and then they ordered a very small shipment of their product, and it was kind of a cup sort of thing that was made out of copper. And when they got this second shipment, they took it out and they went, oh, it seems a little bit lighter, and they could crush it like a beer can. And it's like, it's a packable item. It's not something that you're supposed to be able to crush. And it was kind of like, oh no. And the manufacturer didn't indicate that they'd changed the quality standards or anything. And they get this shipment and it's like, oh, horror story. But you know what those things are like. And that's just one of those warning things that you have to keep an eye on at all times and manage through your manufacturing.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I mean, that exact scenario accounted for a lot of sleepless nights on my part before we got that first shipment, because, yeah, it's something so simple can really just make the entire batch just unusable. And with our product, it had to be really, really exact, because, I mean, you're taking a very sharp piece of steel and putting it against your skin. I mean, any kind of slight deviation in the tolerances can really mean, you know, disaster and a lot of blood loss, or conversely, somebody just not getting a good shave. And so in our case, we really had to nail that sweet spot. But like I said, I mean, we were lucky in the fact that our supplier has been great for us, and the relationship's only getting stronger over time.
Adam, it's been a fascinating journey. Thank you so much for sharing it with us.
Thank you, Janet. It's been a pleasure.
I wish you great success with Leaf Shave. And if people want to find your razor, it's at leafshave.com. Adam Hahn is the co-founder and CEO of Leaf Shave. And that is our show for this week. Check out our Twitter, our LinkedIn and Facebook feeds, and subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, and YouTube. And until next time, I'm Janet Eastman. Thanks very much for listening to the Make It Right podcast.